He will regulate a militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thank you so much for tuning in to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. It is good to have you with us once again. Got a very busy program for you, keeping a close eye on everything going on in Washington, D.C. And in fact, we'll get started there because there's a lot going on in Washington, D.C. Still waiting to hear what, if any, measures President Donald Trump is going to get behind. He met with Republican lawmakers yesterday, expected to be briefed today by White House staffers. Meanwhile, Democrats keep ramping up the pressure on the president and Mitch McConnell over in the U.S. Senate. The House passed three additional gun control measures yesterday. Let's break those down for you. We've got first a quote-unquote red flag bill. Now, this does not set up any sort of federal red flag procedure. Instead, what this does is empowers states around the country to put these sort of red flag laws in place. It provides them grant money. And again, the devil's in the details here. As we've talked about in this program a couple of times, you know, what do these red flag laws look like? What can states get away with? Who can request one of these emergency violence restraining orders? How long do these last? Any opportunity to actually present your case before a judge before you have your rights temporarily taken from you? Can you petition the court to have your rights restored during that window in which your firearms have been taken or you've had to turn them over? Again, these are just a couple of the questions, right, regarding due process concerns. And the bigger question, well, I won't say it's a bigger question. It is at least as big a question, to me anyway. How effective are these things? You know, what is the usefulness of a quote-unquote red flag law as opposed to the existing criminal justice system, the existing mental health system that we have in this country? When is a quote-unquote red flag more appropriate than using the existing criminal justice system and the existing civil commitment laws in this country? So that's one of the measures that passed by Democrats yesterday. One of the other measures, a lifetime prohibition on firearms ownership for those who have been convicted of a misdemeanor hate crime. Look, I'm no fan of hate crimes. I'm no fan of crimes in general. But I do have a concern about lowering the bar to remove your rights. It used to be in order to lose your Second Amendment rights, you had to be adjudicated mentally defective. You had to be convicted of a felony. And then we added in at the federal level, domestic violence misdemeanors, now hate crime misdemeanors. It's not that I am supportive of individuals who commit hate crimes or domestic violence, but I am concerned about the erosion of our rights. And if a charge was not serious enough to rise to a felony level offense, or if somebody was originally charged with a felony and they were allowed to plead down to a misdemeanor, they're probably not going to be spending much, if any, time behind bars. Why would they or should they lose their constitutional rights? And particularly, why should they lose one of their constitutional rights? I have grave concerns about this, not just from a Second Amendment standpoint, but from a civil liberty standpoint. The third measure is a magazine ban. And a lot of folks I've seen kind of wondering, okay, why wasn't this just a quote-unquote assault-weapons ban? That's coming. I don't know why Representative Nadler decided to hold the quote-unquote assault-weapons ban bill back, but he did. They're going to have a separate hearing for that on September 25th. And that bill, authored by Representative David Cicilline from Rhode Island, does also contain a magazine ban, a ban on magazines over 10 rounds. I believe that ban actually also says that if you currently own one of those magazines, you got to hand them over, Mr. and Mrs. America. So those three measures passing out of the House, they're now going over to the Senate side. In the meantime, Mitch McConnell says, you know what, I'm not going to put anything on the floor of the Senate unless I know the president's going to sign it. We don't know what the president would back yet. Pressure again ramping up. You got gun control groups who are demanding that President Trump actually pressure Mitch McConnell. I know, playing a little games, I think, with this issue. And on Capitol Hill yesterday, actress, activist Alyssa Milano had her gun control debate with Texas Senator Ted Cruz. Alyssa Milano bringing the cameras along Yeah, she wanted to live stream it. And I got to tell you, yeah, I watched a pretty good chunk of this yesterday and last evening. And I went into this with high hopes. I am an optimistic guy. I am a bit of an idealist. I do want to see folks on opposite sides reach out to one another and have a conversation. I'm willing to sit down and talk with anybody about these issues. And I can do it civilly. As a matter of fact, I hope in the coming week or so, we might actually have an individual who is promoting some of these ideas, like a ban on the most commonly sold firearm in America today and the mandatory compensated confiscation of said firearms. I'm hoping that we'll actually have one of those individuals on this program and we'll have a conversation. But you didn't get a real conversation. You got a lot of grandstanding. It would have been, of course, we never would have known had the cameras not been there, had that conversation would have gone. But I can't help but wonder if it wouldn't have gone differently had this event not been live streamed. Because Alyssa Milano, like 3 minutes in, she just sounded scripted. She sounded like she was reciting lines. And she said something about, Ted Cruz, you're a caricature of a villain. And did it sort of this very passive aggressive way, like, oh, thank you for meeting with me. Because, you know, you have to know that online you're like the caricature of a villain. And it was on the part of Alyssa Milano, also a Fred Gutenberg was there, whose daughter Jamie was murdered in the Parkland, Florida shootings at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Ben Jackson, another gun control advocate, was there. And it was interesting because it was less of a debate and more of a chance for Alyssa Milano to recite her talking points. At one point, Alyssa Milano asks Ted Cruz, isn't it worth it? Isn't it worth it just to put these gun laws on the books? Isn't it worth it? I mean, even if, there might be some trade-off here and people might, not be able to exercise their rights as robustly as they have been in the past, but isn't it worth it if it saves one life? And Ted Cruz responded by bringing up armed citizens. He said, well, of course it's worth doing whatever we can to reduce violent crime, but, there's two sides of this issue. And the other side of this issue is people use firearms in self-defense. And he brought up the case of a woman in Houston, Texas, who last week used a firearm in self-defense. A group of men surrounded her, began assaulting her, and she drew her firearm. And Alyssa Milano said, well, we don't want to stop her. But that's great. We don't want to stop her from doing that. Which is nonsense. Alyssa Milano absolutely does want to stop that woman from doing what she did. Look, this was on a public street. This woman in Houston, Texas had a concealed carry license. Alyssa Milano lives in California, lives in Los Angeles, where that woman in Houston, Texas could not get a concealed carry license. And I've never heard Alyssa Milano object to the licensing laws to carry a firearm for self-defense in California. Not once. I've heard her say that, we shouldn't be able to buy semi-automatic firearms. I've heard her say that there should be gun licensing to own a firearm. I heard her talk about, quote-unquote universal background checks, but I've never heard Alyssa Milano say, you know what? It's BS that in Los Angeles County, the sheriff will deny you your concealed carry license because they don't recognize self-defense as a valid reason to carry. And yet you go out to Riverside County, California, the sheriff there does recognize self-defense as a valid reason to carry. And so you can get your concealed carry license there. That's absurd. Of course, self-defense is a valid reason to bear arms. Of course, the residents of Los Angeles County have the same right to keep and bear arms as the residents of Riverside County or the residents of Houston, Texas. She's not said that. And so, again, I felt like this was a very disingenuous conversation on the part of Alyssa Milano. I applaud Ted Cruz for sitting down with her. I don't think anybody's minds were changed, even those who might have just been watching or tuning in. But I don't think Alyssa Milano served her cause very well at all, because I don't think she was there as an honest broker. And that came through pretty clearly to me. All right, let's get to our hero of the day, our deal of the day, and our good guy of the day. Actually, before we do that, I do want to let you know what we have going on here at Bearing Arms right now and what we're planning on over the next couple of days, because it is possible. I don't know how likely it is, but it is possible that we will actually hear President Trump announce what specific measures he supports here in the next few days. Again, he's being briefed by White House staffers supposedly this afternoon on some sort of plan. Will he come out this afternoon, this evening, tomorrow, and actually say, okay, this is what we're putting forward. This is what we want the Senate to vote on. It is possible. And again, it seems likely that the parameters, generally speaking, of what we're looking at would be a some sort of measure dealing with background checks. And again, it's still very much up in the air as to whether or not that would look like a Manchin-Toomey-style expansion of who has to conduct a background check during a gun sale, or a fixed NICS approach, which would deal with improving the records within the NICS system itself. And it's kind of up in the air as to which way the president's going to go on that, it sounds like. There's also, I think, likely to see, we're likely to see some sort of action on some form of a red flag bill. I don't know if the president would back the red flag legislation that was passed by the House yesterday, or if Republicans, Senator Lindsey Graham has been working on a bill with Senator Richard Blumenthal, I believe, dealing with quote-unquote red flag laws. Marco Rubio has a bill out there. We don't know, again, the exact parameters of what that red flag legislation might look like, but I think it is likely that when the president does come out and say, all right, here's what I'm backing, you will see some form of a red flag law in place. One of the, I think it was Senator Mitt Romney from Utah, who said yesterday, you know, we're just kind of waiting to see what the president wants to do here. And, you know, until we get something from the president, we can't really do much of anything. I think one of the reasons why you're seeing the White House delay is because the White House is in a rock and a hard place right now, or in between a rock and a hard place. They desperately want to be seen as, quote unquote, doing something, right? Because polls show that's what Americans want. They want something. Meantime, Donald Trump's base does not want to see any erosion whatsoever of the right to keep and bear arms. They don't believe that that is the most effective way to try to stop these types of active assailant attacks or the more common gang-related violence, domestic violence, and suicides in this country that comprise the vast majority of quote-unquote gun violence. They don't believe that going after law-abiding gun owners is the way to do it, and any effort that would do exactly that risks losing support from Donald Trump's base, something that the president does not want to do as we get ever closer to the 2020 elections. So I think that the White House is in a bit of a corner right now. They want to be seen as doing something, but they don't want to do anything that is going to impact or upset their base of support. And I'd like to think, too, that they're looking at things that would actually be effective as opposed to, you know, window dressing, although I don't know if any politician is actually worried too much about the effectiveness of these proposals these days. It's sad to say that, but I get that feeling. So we will see what the White House does, but I imagine there are going to be some very difficult conversations and ultimately a difficult decision for Donald Trump when it comes to deciding whether to back any of these proposals that we have seen and any proposal that might have been floated behind the scenes as well. All right, let's get to today's deal of the day. Our hero of the day, our good guy of the day. We'll start with our plea deal of the day. Case out of California, where a sheriff there in Merced County says the suspect in the shooting of a law enforcement officer was in this country illegally and could have been removed from this country had there been cooperation. Between local law enforcement and federal law enforcement, particularly immigrations and customs enforcement. So the Merced paper says that according to Merced County Sheriff Vern Warnke, the suspect in the shooting of this Merced County Sheriff's deputy, Guadalupe Lopez Herrera, fired one shot at Highway Patrol officers before he was apprehended during a chase after he shot that sheriff's deputy. The sheriff says that Lopez Herrera was in the country illegally and it threatened the lives of his wife's family. Yeah. So according to the sheriff, Lopez Herrera has a history of domestic violence, according to Merced County Court records. Back on January 23rd of this year, less than a year ago, he ended up pleading no contest to a domestic violence charge and making criminal threats. He was sentenced to 45 days in jail, 3 years on probation, and was ordered not to possess any firearms. And he's in this country illegally. Sheriff Warnke says, we had him in our custody in January of this year, and because of the folks in Sacramento limiting our ability to cooperate with ICE, we would not turn him over. We could not turn him over, he said. This kind of rings of what happened to Ronil Singh in Newman. He said, not only has this guy been a proven danger prior to this incident, the attempted murder of one of my sergeants, the attempted murder of a California Highway Patrol officer, because of this, when he should not have been in this country and placed back in the country of origin. The victim in that domestic violence case had actually asked for a restraining order against Lopez Herrera. The woman told the court that Lopez Herrera threatened to kill her with a kitchen knife. And in the request for a restraining order, the woman said that Lopez Herrera then went on to threaten to kill himself. Quote in the court record is saying, you can tell the children that you provoked me to kill yourself or to kill myself, and it was all your fault. Woman said Lopez Herrera then slammed his head into a refrigerator, then approached one of the young children, showed his injuries, and said, look what your mother did to me. Woman described Lopez Herrera as, quote, very jealous, controlling, very angry easily. She said he strangled me, threatened to kill me. Went on to say that she was very scared that her children might be raised without a mother. So again, 45 days, and then he was put on probation. And then his probation ended up getting revoked in August 7th, after he failed to appear in court and a warrant was issued for his arrest. But again, none of this had to have happened had there been that cooperation between local law enforcement and immigrations and customs enforcement. Our hero of the day, from Warren, Ohio, WFMJ, Channel 21, where a woman in Warren, Ohio, tells police she shot at a man that tried to rob her outside of her home. This was September the 9th, just before noon, when police got the call of this robbery. They showed up. Victim said that as she pulled her car into the driveway and got out, tall man wearing a red shirt, tan pants, approached her from behind. According to the police report, the victim then pulled out a gun but was punched in the face by the suspect. Suspect then fled down the victim's driveway. Victim called police to make a report. According to authorities, while the victim was sitting on the front porch waiting for police to arrive, she then walked into her backyard, and she said the suspect returned when she was in her backyard. This time, the victim warned him and said that she would shoot at him if he didn't run away. He instead approached her. She fired a shot. And then the suspect took off. Officers not able to find the suspect. We'll keep an eye on this story, see if there are any updates that become available. But in the meantime, sounds like a case of self-defense there in Warren, Ohio. Now, our good deed of the day. It is the anniversary of September 11th. And I just think it would be most appropriate to honor the countless thousands of individuals who performed those good deeds, large and small, on September 11th of 2001. Obviously, we know more about the men and women of the New York Police Department, the New York Fire Department, who risked their lives and in many cases lost their lives trying to save others from the falling Twin Towers. But if you start to, read or listen to any broadcasts from the time, you quickly realize that there were good deeds being done not only there in New York and in Washington, D.C. at the Pentagon, but really all across the nation on September 11th, 2001. And sadly, the thousands of lives that were lost that day, I think they that tragic scope of the loss tends to make those good deeds seem less important, but they're not. They're absolutely not. I have had the privilege of getting to know some of the individuals who were there at Ground Zero on 9/11, and I can tell you that these individuals were forever changed by what they went through. But something that didn't change in them was that desire to help and serve others. In fact, in some cases, that desire may have been awakened by what they went through on September 11th. I was nowhere near New York City. I was nowhere near Washington, D.C. I was in the tiny town of Enid, Oklahoma on September 11th, 2001. I was working on a documentary about the military in the state of Oklahoma. I was supposed to do some interviews at Advance Air Force Base that morning. I was sitting in the coffee shop with my coworker, and we're getting ready to head over to the base, and I look up, and the TV in the corner is on, and I see the second plane crash into the tower, and that was the first that I knew that something was wrong. Shortly thereafter, we received word that the base was on lockdown. Our interviews were canceled. We're getting ready to head back to Oklahoma City, which was a couple hours away, and my boss said, listen, they've just grounded all air traffic across the country, so I want you to go out to Enid Airport and see if any planes are coming in for a landing, and we can use that on the news that night. There were not any. We waited for a few hours, and finally told my boss, listen, we're just heading back home. And we did. We got back to Oklahoma City. I hopped in my car. I drove down to the home of the woman who was watching our one-year-old son, picked him up, put him in his car seat. And I remember very specifically driving back to our house that afternoon and looking at him in the rearview mirror and telling him, I don't know what kind of world you're going to grow up in now, but it's probably going to be a very different world than the one that I grew up in. And that's the case, I think. It's not completely different, but it is. There is a pre-9/11 world. There's a post-9/11 world, and thankfully, even in this post-9/11 world, people in the right place at the right time are still willing and able to do the right thing. And so, for all of those who performed good deeds on September 11th, 2001, and those who continue to do so today, we thank you for being some of the good guys out there. Now, on tomorrow's edition of Bearing Arms Cam & Company, we're going to spend some time with John Stokes, a writer with all kinds of places, actually. He's got a piece at Reason right now talking about, quote-unquote, gun buybacks and why those who think that a ban and a, quote-unquote, buyback is the way to go in terms of improving public safety, why they are way off target in their proposals. That's coming up on the Thursday edition of Bearing Arms Cam & Company. You can always catch us on podcast form or in podcast form through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, townhall.com podcasts. And of course, you can subscribe to Town Hall Media and you can get the latest Bearing Arms Cam & Company each and every day. Thanks so much for watching, for listening, for sharing the show. And we will see you back here tomorrow with another edition of Bearing Arms Cam & Company.